welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll recap the Giants' 27-13 victory in Cleveland over the Browns. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You could also chime in on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat, as the Giants have now won six in a row for the first time since 2008. They improved to 8-3 overall on the season, and they hand the Browns their 15th straight loss dating back to last season, as the Browns fell to 0-12. They've also lost 22 of their last 23. So we'll delve into a lot with respect to this game. We'll start to look ahead to the final five games of the season, as all the opponents are 500 or better. Of course, things could change depending on the Eagles-Packers outcome tonight. But Paul, let's start with the game between the Giants and the Browns, and the defense once again doing the heavy lifting. Seven sacks against Josh McCown, opportunistic three fumble recoveries, plus JPP turns one of the takeaways into a touchdown.
You know, I have to say something about this team, Lance. I know that it wasn't the prettiest of wins, and I understand that. But defensively speaking, these guys are so much on the same page. We keep asking them over the last couple of weeks, what is the secret to this winning streak? And in terms of the defense being able to lock people down when necessary. And if you remember, it was 14-6 at halftime. Went 14-6 through the third quarter.
Well, they all punted, pretty much.
And look, again, I understand that the Browns are not exactly the most dangerous opponent in the league, but when the Giants' offense was struggling and they couldn't build on that lead and make it a two-score lead to allow you folks at home to get comfortable in your sofa, the defense continued to hold time after time after time. Hey, they're not going to score, offense. Don't worry about it. Breathe. We got this. That's the way it's working right now. To a man, every player that I talk to, on or off the record, and I'm not giving up any secrets here, what they tell me is they trust each other. They know everybody's responsibilities. They're very, very well coached. They all always come back to Spags.
About the scheme and the system.
And how he trusts them. And how they communicate well with him. They're on the same page with him. Folks, you know I'm a huge Spagnuolo fan. I've never hid that. And I could not say it enough last year at what a great job he did with a few pieces to keep the Giants in so many games. And I had people actually come to me and say, well, all right, so they kept Coach McAdoo and they promoted him, but why'd they keep Steve Spagnuolo? Defense was 32nd in the league. Defense was terrible. You know, what are they doing? He hasn't done good in a couple of years. He did bad in New Orleans, did bad in St. Louis. Why? Because here's the deal, folks. Steve Spagnuolo is a brilliant defensive coordinator. That's why. And you are seeing it now, despite the fact that he had to blend a bunch of new pieces in. He has really got these guys so cohesive and so trusting of him, his scheme, and each other. You can't put a price on that. You can't put a value on that. Everybody is just so in unison. The results are clear.
Well, he has depth. He has options. I think we're seeing that on the defensive line. Players like Devon Kennard, Romeo Okwara, Owe Odighizuwa made a nice play or two yesterday before he dealt with the knee injury. So when you have a lot of tools in the shed, you can get a little bit creative, and that's exactly what Spags is doing.
I want you folks to go back, if you have it on your DVRs, I want you to go back to the Browns' second possession of the game, first quarter, 3rd and 8 from their own 36-yard line. It wound up being an incomplete to Pryor. He was guarded by Janoris Jenkins. The Giants put a 5-man pressure package up on the line of scrimmage. Three defensive linemen all lined up from the left side. Linemen, linemen, linemen. Followed by two stand-up linebackers. How often do you see that? Where the three linemen are bunched together and the two linebackers are standing up on the same side.
Well, he's trying to give the opposition different looks. That's exactly what he's trying
to do. What he did. Now, it turned out to be an incompleted pass, but and it wasn't like they got the sack out of it or a turnover out of it, but these are the kinds of things that Spags can do when you give him the tools.
Well, and they really spread the wealth yesterday. If you look at the stats, Paul, in terms of taking advantage, first of all, and how many times have we talked about this, Paul, throughout the season? We go into this game, we look at the strengths and weaknesses of the opponent, and we say, boy, this team's got a banged-up secondary. This team's got a banged-up offensive line. On paper, this is a very attractive matchup for the Giants. And how many times did it not necessarily translate to the field? Yesterday, this was a Browns offensive line that surrendered a league-high 38 sacks. The Giants feasted, took full advantage of that. With a season-high 7 sacks, they have 21 sacks, Paul, during this 6-game winning streak. They had 4 in the first 5 games. That's been a big turnaround. I think takeaways has also been a noticeable change. A lot of opportunistic plays during this winning
streak. They go hand-in-hand.
There you go. So that's really turned the corner here with respect to this 6-game winning streak. But you had Olivier Vernon have a sack and a half. You had Jonathan Hankins have a sack and a half. JPP had 3. Plus, he was able to get the takeaway and return for a touchdown, his first defensive score since 2013 here at MetLife when he intercepted Scott
Tolzien.
That's
his third of
his
career.
Third of his career, but most recently was the 2013 one against the Packers. And Janoris Jenkins, and that's another thing that I think we should focus on with respect to Spags and how he's moving guys around. The secondary is responsible for a lot of sacks this season, Paul.
Yeah, well, again, we know from when Spags was here the first time, he's not afraid to send a corner blitz. He's not afraid to send the slot guy or the outside guy, and he's certainly not afraid to send the safeties. Although he hasn't really done as much of that this year. It's been more the corners that have been going.
Collins does have a few sacks, though.
He does. Yeah. He does, but he's been more apt to send the corners this year than he was in years past with the Giants. I think the other thing I want to mention to you before we get off the Twitter feed, the other thing I want to mention is that in looking at this defense, it seems to me that despite the fact that he's doing all kinds of scheming and he's confusing people and the guys are hitting hard and the guys are being sound, look again at the missed tackles. How many yesterday?
You can barely even count on one hand.
It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. Folks, I tell you this all the time. It's that other hidden stat that people don't talk about. Missed tackles. Keep that number under 5 or 6, and you've had a good game, and you got a real good chance to win. That's just the way it goes in this league. And once again, the proof is in the pudding. The missed tackles were way down, hardly noticeable at all. Giants win.
And that's how you prevent the big plays, because when you can't bring guys down, all of a sudden they can gain some rhythm and momentum, and that wasn't necessarily the case for the Cleveland Browns, who had some favorable field position at times.
Sure they did.
Because of some special teams mishaps. And we're going to get into the special teams, we're going to get into the offense as we move forward here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. For those of you watching on Twitter, we welcome you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Monday's edition on Giants.com, recapping the 27-13 victory over the Cleveland Browns. Before we get to the phone lines at 201-939-4513, special teams, another big storyline in this game, Paul, and penalties plagued special teams in yesterday's game. First of all, they had 9 penalties as a team, which was their highest since they had 11
Not a good number.
Earlier this season. And remember, Paul, this is a team that came and tied for the fewest penalties in the NFL.
No
and
doubt.
All of a sudden, that skyrockets to 9. So while I would say the missed tackles were gone, the undisciplined play, though, came back to the forefront a bit.
How do I say this without getting anybody into trouble?
Well, I don't think you get anybody into trouble.
I don't think it was the officials' best day. How about that?
Okay. I understand where you're coming from. But with that being said, the facts are the facts. And the facts are 3 offensive penalties, 3 defensive penalties, 3 special teams penalties, 2 of which backed out an Odell Beckham
return. Huge returns.
One was for a touchdown, and the other one was a pretty good return that would have given the Giants great field position.
Yeah. You know, we can argue all we want about the judgment on kick return penalties, because there is one school of thought that says if the penalty occurs way on the other side of the field and clearly had no impact in the play, should you call it? The other school of thought is by the book. If it's a penalty and you see it, you call it. And that's all there is to it. I don't know. And the problem is when you waffle, you cause even more problems, because you can't call it one day and then the next day say, you know what I mean? So it's an issue. I tend to believe that a lot of times when the play is clearly, the penalty is behind the play or it's on the other side of the field, I tend to think that unless it was very egregious, I probably would lean towards the side of being lax and let the players play. You know, that's my philosophy.
No, and I think that's a fair philosophy. Paul, I was going to use an analogy on defense that I think relates to what you're bringing up. If a ball is deflected and perhaps there's pass interference further down the field,
right,
it cancels it out because the receiver was never going to come back to get the football.
That is true.
So it's
almost, that's the way the rule's written.
It is, and I'm not making this up, but I'm saying what's related to what your point is. You're saying, listen, if there's something that happens on this side of the field and Beckham is running up the
right
side
of the field. Unless it's egregious.
Correct, meaning it jumps to the forefront. You're like, oh, we can't just cover that up and swallow the flag.
Right.
Under the circumstances.
Exactly.
But those are the types of things, obviously, that come into play with most games. But with that being said, I think there has
too many
been,
penalties.
There has been an issue, though, specifically, though, on special teams over the last few games, Paul, whether it be a big return being allowed,
yeah,
penalties, mishaps. There was a muff punt by Bobby Rainey again for the second straight week.
But again, a mixed bag there, as it has been throughout the entire discussion of this game, a mixed bag because the kick return coverage was outstanding yesterday.
Well, and how about Brad Wing? Probably deserves an MVP award for his performance yesterday.
Deserved one 2 weeks ago against Chicago in that wind.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. And was it, again, talk about value for a seventh-round draft pick. Boy, that was a great trade. Robbie Gould, wide right, on a point after.
Special teams.
I mean, you know, there were a bunch of bad special teams things that happened yesterday. But the one thing that went absolutely A-plus right was their kick coverage, which was about as good as you could possibly make it. They were great on kick coverage.
They forced Cleveland to have to go the length of the field more often than not, with the exception of the muff punt that
right,
gave Cleveland favorable field position. But with that being said, Giants' red zone defense took over and prevented them from getting into the end zone, and they had to settle for a field goal. So we're going to continue to unravel a number of different storylines from yesterday's game. We want to hear from you as well. I know a lot of people want to weigh in at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Len, getting to us a bit early today in Columbia, Maryland. Len, how are we doing?
Hey, how you doing, guy? Man, I can't believe I'm first.
Yeah, I know what happened. 1 o'clock game, you got early sleep, and now you're first on the calls.
Thank you. Okay, well, listen, 8-3, terrific. Five games to go. Who's to say? Let's win these five. I mean, the team is playing really well. And, we got to be feeling pretty good about this. Paul, on the defense, kind of an interesting point. One of the things, the points I wanted to make, you started to make for me. Thank you.
Okay.
And that is, you could make a case. When I say you, I mean all of us could really make a case for Landon Collins, Snax Harrison, and Jason Pierre-Paul right now in this string of games and heading into the last third of the season. They could be the three best defensive players in the league. I mean, these guys are excellent players playing excellent. I mean, they are on the top of their game. And I think there are better days ahead. And you know, when you look at it, Jenkins, Vernon, not too far behind. And Hankins and Cromarty, not too far behind that. I mean, this defense is just really on top of its game, and these are, you know, very good players playing very good. And I think the next couple of weeks are going to be good. I see no reason why we can't go into Pittsburgh and win that game.
I think
the way the defense is playing.
I think defensively, I didn't mean to cut you off, Len. I mean, I think you made excellent points, all fair points, and I don't think there's any concern about the defense no matter what team they go up against. I think perhaps if there's anything to bring to the table right now, it's the fact that in the event the Giants do get into a shootout, and let's say the defense can't be as stingy, and that's a lot of pressure to put on the defense that every time an opponent gets into the red zone that you're going to hold them to a field goal. I mean,
yep,
we even saw the Bengals cash in on a few opportunities.
Yep.
The point is, can the offense pick up a little bit to go pace to pace with perhaps some of these other prolific offenses that are on the schedule? I think that, to me, would be the biggest question mark moving forward.
Yeah, and, you know, and just to add to that, Lance, Ben will be Ben on Sunday. And in that stadium, Ben is even better than the regular Ben. So, I mean, it is going to be tough. I'm not saying it's not going to be tough. I'm just saying with these guys on the field on defense, they're not going to move up and down the field. The only thing, a little thing I'm worried about, of course, Brown is a wonderful receiver, but You know, and let me change course for just a second and say something about Beckham. The guy has got a gear after the gear. I mean, he doesn't just have another gear. He's got another one beyond that gear. I mean, he's breathtaking.
He's a dynamic player. Yeah.
Those punt returns. That was Paul. I can't remember whenever I've seen anything like that. Maybe Homer Jones. Now that's going way back, Paul. But maybe Jones had that kind of gear after the gear. But oh my God, when he turned it on, that was like.
Len,
holy cow.
I've had this discussion with a number of people because I'm relaying it from a guy who was involved in scouting and personnel for a good 40 years in the National Football League. He's a dear friend of mine. And I talk to him every week. Okay? I mean, when I talk to people, they're old school. What a surprise, right?
Yes.
So I talk to him every week. And we talk about different things, schemes, personnel, scouting other teams. Every week we talk. The thing he said to me about Beckham, and I have never forgotten this, and I relate to anybody who talks to me about how amazed they are at his skill set. He told me right away the thing he saw is that Odell Beckham physiologically, much like Michael Phelps, has the perfect body type to be a great swimmer, and it's almost unfair against everybody else he competes against because he's got the certain dynamics and measurements in his body. Odell Beckham Jr. has the most fluid hip rotation of anybody in the league. And he said to me, it is impossible. Impossible. This is coming from a guy who's been involved in the game forever. He said to me, it is impossible for a defensive back to stick with him on a route one-on-one because his hip rotation is so smooth and it's so quick. He never loses any acceleration or speed when he rotates his hips and he changes direction. It is so fluid that he physically cannot be guarded.
Thanks, Paul, for adding that.
And that's what it comes down to. We're thinking it's speed, we're thinking it's quickness. It's not. He's got a physiological hip rotation that is just it's God-given. It's not just about being fast, which is why he wasn't the fastest guy in the combine.
He's not.
Well, but he plays faster than anybody because of his hips.
Let me just say one last thing on Odell. He's had terrific coaching all along, okay? But you can't teach that, Paul.
No, it's
so
God-given.
Right.
It's God-given.
You can't teach it. I mean, you just either... You know, you either got it or you don't.
And here's the thing. You don't get that.
He's really got
it. Okay, Lynn. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say just a couple more things. Just on the use of players yesterday. Very late in the game, next to last series, offense struggling a little bit. Yes, absolutely. We were not running the ball. We almost seemed like we were playing, guarding against losing the game. But let me next to last play, next to last series. McDermott at right guard and Beatty at right tackle.
Yeah.
Hart and Geddes on the bench. Now, the next series, I know at least Geddes went back in. I couldn't pick up on TV whether or not Hart went back in. But what was that all about, Paul?
I was on the sidelines at that point. In fact, I was on the sidelines the whole game. And so I was having trouble during the last two series trying to identify every player on every snap. I can't tell you 100% what happened. The question never came up in postgame. I was aware, though, that McDermott and Beatty had come onto the field because they were going into the jumbo package, kill the clock mode, and they ran the extra the extra tight end eligibles onto the field. I was aware of that. I'm not sure about the combos you're talking about. I'll try to get to the bottom of that.
Okay, one other quick thing, because I know you got a lot of other calls. Great catch by Harris.
Yes.
You think we'll see him integrated into the game a little more as a pass receiver? I'm not sure who you take off the field.
I know not a lot of targets yesterday.
Not a lot of throws at Shepard. I don't want to take the kid off the field.
Cruz.
But is there a place for Harris on the field?
In spot duty, there is, but he's not going to be part of the regular top three rotation. He can't be.
Yeah, he can't be.
He can't
I
be.
He's
a great number four. He's a great number four. He's actually an okay three, but he's a great four, so keep him at four.
Yeah, remember, Len, he played a lot last season. Cruz was out, so they needed somebody to be a more consistent second and third option. I think they have to just pick their spots with respect to him, and I also think that given the injuries that he's dealing with and they're holding him back a bit with special teams, as Ben McAdoo mentioned in his postgame presser, they still want to find ways to get him on the field because they know he can make some dynamic, game-changing plays. So, therefore, they had a red zone opportunity for him, as Dwayne Harris said after the game. Eli looked at him, audibled the play. They went to him on the fade route, and they executed. So they're going to have to pick their spots. And, Len, appreciate the phone call.
He won't be forgotten,
hey,
Len. Trust me.
Guys. Let's go Giants.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for chiming in. Let's head back to the phone lines because I know a lot of people want to weigh in. Joel is in Arkansas. Joel, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys?
How we doing, Joel? What do you got for us?
Pretty good. I got a couple points I want to make. First, actually, is more on the side of a question. I understand the last three games we've been able to eclipse the 100-yard mark as a team coming out of the backfield. But I've seen the last few weeks really our most successful plays are when Eli is under center and we have more downhill run-blocking zone read schemes, giving Jennings and Paul Perkins the chance to read their blocks and cut up field, which is more, I think, their style of running, especially Jennings. But what do you guys think about that?
Well, I would agree with you. I mean, I think it was evident in yesterday's game, Paul, where Jennings, there were a few consecutive carries that he had. It was uphill running, and he was very effective. He had about a 6-yard run, I think, an 11-yard run on one consecutive drive.
There's no doubt that even though the 100 yards yesterday was deceiving on the ground, that over the course of the last three games, they have run the ball better, especially when either going to a jumbo tight end package or when running under center. There's no question about that. And any running back will tell you that he's better getting off to that quick jump start out of a down position than he is standing up straight waiting for the handoff. It does make a difference.
I agree. I believe also, really when we get into our A sets, two double tight end sets, even when we get into our I formations that we rarely see, I think Eli as a whole, coming out of play action and just even when he just drops back out in those formations, I've seen him, just much more of a prolific passer because that's what he's came out of from Ole Miss. That's the Kevin Gilbride offense that he was with for multiple years.
Yeah, but see, that goes hand in hand because we know that Eli has proven he's one of the best play action passers in the league. Well, what happens if your running game isn't going real well? And especially if you're running out of the shotgun, you're diluting his ability to be an effective play-action passer. I mean, that's kind of like A plus B equals C.
And they're not going to bite on the run under those circumstances.
Right. I mean, and moving into special teams, it's great that we have such a great punter, like Brad Wing, because I get so confused sometimes when Ben McAdoo calls a draw on third and long, when I feel like really we could hit somebody like Odell Beckham Jr. down the seam or Will Ty and maybe get 15 of them at least, But Brad Wing pinning the Browns yesterday inside the 20 on what was that, 5 of the punts and then 3 inside the 10. That's
real good.
An exemplary job by him. But really adding to that special teams, I'd like to see Odell return punts more in critical situations. Games against the 0-12 Browns, I really think that was very high risk, and low reward. But I'd like to see more of the rookie, Paul Perkins, be more of a regular punt returner. I guess you guys can just chime in on that, and that's all I got for you guys.
All right, Joel, appreciate the phone call.
Paul Perkins
so
is a punt returner. I see him as a potential good kickoff returner. I don't see him necessarily as a punt returner. Do you?
No, I haven't necessarily envisioned that based on my thinking. I have no problem, based on Joel's question, having Odell Beckham return punts. He's their most dynamic player on the team. I don't buy into the rationale, Paul, that you're putting a player at risk. First of all, a player can get hurt on any play any given time.
I you got to understand, Giants folks remember when Seahorn was back
and
there.
I remember that too.
And it gives them a real bad feeling.
But you know what that is? That's coaching out of fear.
I know.
And you can't survive in this league if you coach out of fear.
I know.
Antonio Brown, they're going up against the Steelers this week. Brown does everything.
Yes.
Mike Tomlin doesn't put him in a box and say, yes, we're going to save him for a special
moment. See, though, if healthy, Dwayne Harris should be doing it because he's outstanding at it.
But you have to change. Under the circumstances, he's not fully healthy. If he's got a bad wrist, would you rather have a guy with an injured wrist trying to field punts?
No.
And put yourself at risk of coughing it up? Or would you rather then replace him with somebody who you know can catch and can all of a sudden in the blink of an eye turn the tables on special teams?
I don't think there's any doubt that Odell Beckham Jr. is a more dangerous punt return threat. A, because he handles the ball better. B, because he really can take it the distance than Bobby Rainey is. So for that reason, while I may be a little queasy about seeing him back there, I'm not going to object to it. You know, especially in a big spot if they really need a good return.
Correct. But you know what? Yesterday's game, and we talked about this off the top, it wasn't a pretty win.
No.
They got it done on defense. But, you know, a play here or there, you take away JPP's touchdown, this game is much closer down the stretch. So a special teams play could very well have been the difference there.
Just as a matter of information, he mentioned Paul Perkins, his college numbers at UCLA. He is listed as returning one punt for 6 yards back in 2013 as a freshman. No other kick returns or punt returns on his collegiate resume. I do think he's got the skills to be a very good kickoff returner. I don't think I would want to see him on punt returns. But that would be my preference if I were to even put him back there. Without the experience factor, I would think it would be foolish to put him back there, period. Unless he got experience doing it. If they went into the springtime in minicamp and trained him to do that,
yeah,
and then into the summertime and trained him to do that, then I'd be okay with it. You know, look, remember, oh, my goodness, the running back from UMass, Michael Cox.
Michael Cox, yes. Michael
who
Cox.
I thought immediately when I saw him, I said, my goodness, this guy's going to be a good kickoff return guy. Wouldn't you know, that's how he made the team.
And they
as
put
a kickoff
him in
return
and provided
guy.
Provided a spark.
Absolutely. He was okay. Yeah. He was pretty good at kickoff returns. I just knew it. And I think Perkins might be pretty good at it too, but without being able to give him a training camp to do it, I wouldn't even consider throwing him back there.
Well, I'll throw another name out there. He's a rookie too, so lack of experience. What about Sterling Shepard? That's an option.
Well, you know what?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I'm going to tell you right
college,
now. I'm going to tell you right now if he did any in college.
I do think he has the skill set, though, to be a punt returner. I'll tell
you. I agree with you. I agree. I think he's definitely
the
got the skill set.
Experience is another question. I don't know how many reps he got in college. But
we're going to look at it right now.
To see if they
when he was
it.
In college, he returned punts. 30 career return punts for a 7.4 average. Not necessarily impressive. Only had one kickoff return in college. But did have 30 career punt returns.
That's the guy.
So it's something he's done.
Yeah. He may be a better option than Paul Perkins if they want to mix in some other receivers and so forth.
You know, I think right now what Bobby Rainey needs to do is show that he can hold on to the ball, you know, because that's been a problem for him in the past. And, you know, they obviously like his ability to show quicks. There's no question that Bobby Rainey has some ability, but got to hold the ball.
Remember, he goes back with Mike Sullivan in Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Mike Sullivan was the offensive coordinator. So if there's anybody that knows his skill set, it's the guy running the offense right now. Let's reopen up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. So glad you could join us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, recapping the Giants' 27-13 win over the Browns. Scott is in D.C. Scott, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right, Scott. What do you got for us?
Well, three quick things. I want to say I'm really happy with the record they've got. The way I see it, they got to get 3 more wins, get to 11 to wrap up a playoff spot. I'm not sure I see. I'm not sure I see the 3 wins on the schedule. But be that as it may, there are 2 points I want to talk about: 1 special teams, 1 offense. Paul, you know, over the last several months, you've said a couple of dozen times that it's all about production. In my view, it's all about production and accountability. I don't see that there's either production or accountability on the special teams. You know, you've had fumbles, you've had muffs, you've had penalties, you've had misses. Every kind of bad thing that can happen on special teams, you're seeing this team produce. I think there's got to be some accountability because of the lack of production. You know, they can find a kicker off the street who can hit. There's any number of kickers who they can replace, but Gold is not doing the job.
Well, Scott, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Jeff Fiegels on our radio postgame show yesterday about that, and one of the things he brought up, and remember, Jeff's worked with a number of different kickers because he's held mm-hmm. throughout the course of his career, and he said, while it may be easy to find the guy off the street, as you just mentioned, Scott, the other thing you need to take into consideration is chemistry and continuity, and if they were to bring in another kicker, that'd be the fourth different kicker that would wear a Giants uniform in one season. And Jeff wasn't necessarily confident that that's necessarily a good plan. So, and that's coming from somebody that's been involved in the process.
I want to make sure.
I have no problem doing that.
I want to make sure you understand just a couple things before you paint the entire special teams as being poor. Giants are ninth in the NFL in kickoff return average. That's ninth out of 32 teams. That doesn't qualify as poor to me. And I don't think anybody would dispute that Brad Wing has had a Pro Bowl type season as a punter, and he's part of the special teams also.
That brings me to my second point. If ninth is good, I know that 21st in the league in points, 21st in the league in offensive yards per game, 31st in the league in time of possession, 31st in the league in rushing yards. Mm-hmm. That's bad. The offense is not performing. Now,
no one's going to argue with
I
that.
I made a mistake. I admit it. I made a big mistake. I called into the program, and I predicted that Eli would throw 7 left-handed passes this season. I'm wrong. That's probably not going to happen, but he does throw a wobbly ball. He threw a wobbly ball in the wind. He throws a wobbly ball indoors. He threw wobbly balls yesterday. Great that they turned into touchdowns. But I think it's fair to say that this team is not performing on offense either at 21 points a game. You got a 3-and-out percentage of more than 25%. They're 5th in the league in 3-and-out percentage. That's not a good statistic. They're 6th in the league.
They're 6th in the league.
They're 6th in the league in third down efficiency. Those are big screaming problems that if they are lucky enough to get into the playoffs are going to be exposed. This team still has a lot of improvement to do. I, for one, am disappointed. This is not week 1. This is not week 4. This is not week 8. This is December, the next game. It's about time that they put all 3 phases together.
I think Coach McAdoo would agree with you. You know, this team has now about a month or so to reach its peak, reach its potential, and then go into the playoffs and try to go somewhere. If you really believe that you've seen the best of this Giants team and you're unhappy with it, well, then you can go watch your DVR and keep watching the first 11 games of the season, and you can wallow in that if you like. I'm telling you that this team has shown some improvement since it did a month and a half ago, and they should continue to show it. And at the end of the season, I invite you to do one of two things. Either watch this team go into the playoffs or don't watch this team go into the playoffs. That's your prerogative.
Yeah, well, you know, you said, Paul, making the playoffs like Cincinnati does year after year after year is nothing special. You want to advance. Simply making the playoffs ain't good enough.
When you haven't been there 4 years in a row, it is.
Well, Scott, I disagree.
That's where you're wrong.
Scott, I disagree with you, and I actually think the Bengals are a great example because, you know what, once you get into the dance, who knows what's going to happen. So I would say if you're a team that can consistently get in every year.
That's my position. I'm just telling you what Paul has
said. I'm not one who enjoys the habitual one and dones. I'm with you on that. That's exactly how I feel. But when you haven't made the playoffs in 4 straight years, just getting in is a significant accomplishment. And it looks like that's where this team's headed.
I hope with all my heart that they make it.
Okay.
This is week 11. This is week 11 this week. And that was not good quality football yesterday.
Well, Scott, that's why
the league is full of parody.
It is.
What do you want?
Okay, well, if everyone's equal, they're at the bottom of the heap because
at 8-3
they have more 3-and-outs
at 8-3
and therefore punts. They have more 3-and-outs and therefore punts than anyone else in the league. Except for 4 other teams.
Well, but Scott, and listen, appreciate the phone call.
Thank you
so much for weighing in.
We'll talk to you again.
I think when he's evaluating this team, and I'm not going to disagree with some of the ups and downs on offense, there are three facets to a football team. So just because you have a lot of punts and a lot of three and outs based on what he's saying doesn't mean that you only can win games with your offense.
He very conveniently forgets that Shane Vereen hasn't been around, that he's one of the best third-down backs in the National Football League.
So there's
kind of a reason that they haven't been great on third down.
Well, but even with that being said, and I'm not going to deny that, Paul, the fact is Shane Vereen's not on the team right now, meaning he's on the team, but he's not going to come and
working
be
his way back,
overnight.
Though. Worked out again before the game yesterday.
The reality is he's not on the field. So I'm saying if they do have some offensive struggles, clearly what they're proving is they can win games with their defense this year, something that they could not do last season.
Correct.
Which means if you can find a variety of ways to win in this league,
you're better off.
Nobody's saying that they're going to crown you as the best team, but at least you have some versatility and ways to overcome some of your other obstacles. We're going to learn a lot about this team over these last five games. Okay?
Yeah.
This is when you start to separate the men from the boys.
And you can quote me on this too, Scott. Quote me on this. If the Giants don't make the playoffs after an 8-3 start, they don't deserve to make it. That's it. Case closed. And then you can be happy and cry your Cheerios.
Well, listen, they control their own destiny right now. So if they don't make the playoffs, obviously it's going to be a reflection of what happens in the final five games.
Talk about, he's like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. Hello, it's a dreary day.
You know what I always say about this program? Every caller has an identity. Charlie, you know, he loves the offensive line. Scott is one of those guys that even after a win.
Charlie is not nearly as down as Scott was.
But he's got the magnifying glass out. So even
Charlie's old school, though, and I dig that. You know, I always want to see the offensive line go better.
Do we really need to sit here and
make
excuses for Charlie?
Yeah, we can. Charlie's all right.
I don't know.
He's all right. I've gotten
it.
I've butted heads with him before, too, but he's okay.
Way too much.
He's gotten better this year. He's smartened up.
I don't know about drastic improvement. Maybe baby steps on his part. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here. David is in North Carolina. Dave, what's happening? Dave, are you there?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hello.
Thanks for taking the call. I'm not going to beat up Eli's as heavy as Scott did, but I wanted to ask you, Paul. I mean, I don't always agree, but I respect your opinion, and you've been with the team for a long time. I wanted to get your take. It just seems like we haven't been able to hit the deep pass outside the deep ball to Cruz. Now, him and Cruz have connected several times.
Sure.
Are you seeing anything why that is?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's arm strength, because on the first throw, that's 7 points, and he just overthrew him. So, obviously, the strength was there on that throw. But to me, it just seems like I said, I don't want to be too critical of Eli, because gosh knows our running game is awful. And I think we're getting the ball out so fast, we're hiding a lot of deficiencies on this O-line, which I think personally is very poor. There's a lot of things Eli's doing in the game that doesn't show up on the stat sheet.
No question.
That he deserves credit for.
No question. Like the touchdown pass to Dwayne Harris yesterday.
Yes, sir.
That's an Eli call. He did that.
Is it fair to say that, especially when teams are playing so much of that too deep, I mean, do you think in these final five games, does Eli need to step it up even more? And why do you think we're not hitting on some of those throws? Has it been the wind? And then after you answer that, I've just got one more question and I'll get off.
All right. I'll try to be brief on this one. I don't have the stats literally right at my fingertips to back this up, but I'll tell you what my educated eye sees. Eli's been inconsistent this year. There's no question about it. I think he had a better year last season than he has had so far this season. There's no doubt that, for example, against Chicago, the wind in this place was insane. Jeff Fiegel sits next to me in the press box, and he knows more about wind conditions than anybody I've ever met.
He regrets that experience, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. And so let me tell you something. Every time Eli had his back to the wind, the ball went long and sailed on him. He had a lot of trouble with the windy conditions. Now, you can argue all you want. It's his home stadium, and you could say, well, maybe he's got to know how to play it better. I can only say to you, the wind was a huge factor, and him not being able to hit anything over 20 yards, or much over 20 yards, against the Bears. Yesterday, I just thought he was off. I don't think he threw the ball very well deep yesterday at all. I thought the balls were short. They were hanging. It allowed the defensive backs to make plays, to knock balls down, where usually with Eli, that's not the case. So
yeah.
I think he was off. Now, I will also tell you, Coach McAdoo admitted this after the game, despite the fact that there were not there was one sack, I believe, by
one
the Browns.
Sack. Yes.
There were too many times where the pass protection broke down and Eli felt it more so than maybe he should have. That could have contributed, but I will say this. He was inconsistent yesterday. He's probably had about four inconsistent games this year where he did not really throw the ball very well. So in reference to Scott's point before, I agree. Eli Manning is not having a Pro Bowl season. I think he's having a good season, and especially when you understand the audibles that he makes and the check with me's that he makes and how many great throws like he made to Dwayne Harris for the touchdown yesterday, you got to say it's a mixed bag. There's been inconsistencies. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, and it does. And I just wanted to get your perspective because I agree. I think, I mean, we asked so much of him, but I think there's another level he can hit, and I hope he does in this final stretch.
I think he would be the first one to tell you that, by the way. I think Eli is a very responsible, self-conscious guy. He'd be the first one to tell you he has not had a Pro Bowl season, and he needs to do better if the Giants expect to go far. I guarantee you he would tell you that.
Yeah, that's good to know. The last question, and I hate to look forward, but with the way the defense is playing and some of the performances yesterday, the fan in me can't help but to look toward the future just a little bit, even though I want to focus on the great season we're having. And so I'll reference this one to you, Paul. What do you think? Is it possible? Is it not? And I'll take it off the air so some other
Go
guys
ahead.
Can get in. I look at this defense, and I want to keep it together, and I know the popular opinion is Eli Apple's the heir apparent to DRC. But, Paul, I tell you, boy, I'd really love to get another year of DRC, Jonathan Hankins, and JPP. And I just worry if we've got the cap space and the ability to do so. What are your thoughts? Is there some that you would rather have if you had to, lose a guy? Like I said, I'll listen off the air, and I appreciate it, guys.
All right, Dave, thanks for the phone call.
Very intelligent phone call. And I would tell you right now, going into this season, I was not sure that given all the cap implications that DRC would necessarily be back next year. He has another year left on his contract. He would be one of the higher paid players on the club. And I wasn't really sure, based on durability factors, and when would we start seeing a decline in him? I got news for you. I think he's had a really good season. You could argue he's even been better this year than he was last year when he wound up being an alternate, made the Pro Bowl.
Well, he's also been durable this year, too.
More durable.
So that's
no question.
Well, he's staying on the field.
So in my mind right now, I'm thinking you probably want him to stay. Now, again, it's premature. There's still time to go. But I'm thinking you probably want him to stay because that three-corner rotation that the Giants have, with DRC and Apple and Jenkins is really good.
Well,
it's really good.
It's a luxury. Most teams can't say that they have.
And it's a great one to have.
Reliant, of course.
And without it, the Giants went on a three-game losing streak this year.
When those guys were in and out of the lineup. Apple,
do you need
DRC.
Any more proof?
So
let me just
that.
Give you that first. Second, he mentioned Hankins.
Hankins, yes.
And he mentioned
JPP.
I think the Giants will make an honest attempt to bring both of them back. I really do. Now, it's going to take some jockeying. It's going to take some understanding by the players. What's the value? How much guaranteed? How many more years do you want? Blah, 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 blah. It's going to take some negotiating. I'm not going to tell you it won't. I do believe that based on what I've seen now, I would think that they would want both of these guys to come back, and I would think that they've got the wherewithal to do it. Remember, the Giants have cap room already this year that they can push
Correct. They
into next year.
Everything up, and in the NFL, you can carry over what's ever left over to the
Bingo.
Following year. So that will help.
That's a very, very important thing to remember.
And I think that JPP, I mean, I understand last offseason was a very unique experience, but I think deep down inside, he wants to stay with the Giants. He just seems to have that mindset that although there may be teams that are going to be interested in him, some players just want to stay where they're comfortable. He seems to be one of those players.
Let's not make any mistake about it. He has really grown into this place.
Correct.
And he has flourished here. And I think it's a great fit for him and a great fit for the team to have him stay.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. We'll get to your tweets as well, hashtag Giants Chat. We got Shakes in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening? Shakes,
hello?
Are you there? Shakes, a man of very few words.
Oh, no.
Normally, he is not a guy that quiets down when we go to him. In the meantime, why don't we check in with Tim in Orlando? Tim, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for making it, Tim.
Hi.
So what do you have for us?
I just want to say, we were talking about JPP and the defensive line. I just want to say, as a fan of JPP and all that he's gone through, I was so happy for him watching him return that fumble, interception,
yeah,
whatever you want to call it. I was so happy for him.
By the way, the league, in all likelihood, is going to review that play. It was first ruled an interception for a touchdown. Later on during the afternoon, they reversed it into a fumble return for a touchdown. Before the game was over, the communication didn't go out to everybody. And that type of play, that becomes a statistical dispute to where the NFL and Elias will review those kinds of plays over the course of Monday and Tuesday. And by Wednesday, there will then be an official designation as to what they will statistically count the play as.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not
mm-hmm.
wrong to say you think it was an interception or a fumble. We'll know Wednesday what the play really was. I think it was an interception myself.
Well, it's a great play no matter how they rule it.
It's a touchdown.
It's a touchdown, so it really doesn't make a difference.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Just so you know.
I don't think Tim was sitting at home waiting for it to get confirmation.
I know, but I felt compelled to give you an explanation.
What else you got,
Tim? I will say, though, all right, the fourth quarter was great. I mean, defense has been awesome this year, and our offense kind of picked it up in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, the first half, I was tearing my hair out watching us go three and out, I don't know, four straight times against the Browns, who are, like, last in the league.
Or wasn't pretty.
Last in the league in all these defensive categories. My question is, I think it has to do with the run game because we're so one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Jerry Reese in the offseason, what are some specific moves you can do in the draft and free agency to try and up this run game and this offense as a whole?
You want to go first?
Well, in terms of the running game, first of all, I think the running game has made progress. You know, nobody's saying that this team is going to run for 150 to 200 yards, but if you look at what they were doing early in the season, Paul, mm-hmm. to what they've done in the last two games, I know there were ups and downs in yesterday's game, but there were stretches where they went uphill and they were effective, and they should be effective running against the Cleveland Browns' 31st-ranked rushing defense.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't really argue with that. And they were balanced yesterday. They had 27 pass attempts and 27 rushes, which is an ideal type of scenario that
nothing
you want to always
that.
See play out. There's nothing wrong with that. But, I mean, in terms of more consistency, I think the difference between this season and last season is they're actually sticking with one or two running backs. You're not seeing four or five guys get work, which I think has helped this backfield immensely. Jennings is the main workhorse. Perkins is the change of pace. They seem to be stuck on those two, which I think has done wonders for the sake of continuity. I also think it's helped that they've brought in an extra offensive lineman in the jumbo package because in those games, they have run more effectively. When it was Newhouse, mm-hmm. when it was Beattie, when they run to that side, they seem to have a little bit more wiggle room. So, you know, those two things, if they can continue to keep the personnel groupings the way it is, they can continue to have the jumbo package, I think you will start to see more and more flashes. But once again, you have to keep expectations in check. I don't think we're going to see this team get to consistently getting to 150 or even maybe approaching a 200-yard game. They're just not built that way right
My now. My goal, yeah. to be honest with you, is if they can average about 110 yards a game on the ground,
I'll take that.
I think that would be enough with the other elements they have to be a bona fide playoff team that can make some waves. But I think you got to be over 100 yards. I'm thinking 110. In a perfect world, you'd like to have about 130 yards a game rushing. That would put you in the top five, even a little bit higher in the league. That would be wonderful. But the league is more of a passing league now, so I'm not going to get so greedy.
Yeah.
I'm going to say give me 110 yards a game. But you're asking about in the offseason, Will Johnson, who is a blocking tight end / fullback, he's on IR. He's going to be healthy next year. He's signed through the 2017 season. When he's healthy and he's playing next year, you will see a better running game. I promise you. I would also go out and I would draft another stud offensive lineman. And between those two factors, I think the Giants will run the ball better. I also think Paul Perkins is going to be a much bigger part of this offense next year, because he'll be in year two, he will have learned a lot, and I think the Giants are going to run the ball a whole lot better in 2017. But I'm not caring about that right now. I'm caring about what's happening Sunday against Pittsburgh.
I like that. I like that. And my goal for the running game, I mean, we don't have the Cowboys. I hate the Cowboys, but we don't have their offensive line. We got to give them props for that. My goal for the running game, who cares about yards? I just want to see Beckham and Sterling Shepard have a little more space. Like, they're always playing too high safety.
Yeah.
If we can just make them respect our running game a little bit more, then maybe that'll free up some more opportunities for Odell, who yesterday we saw how electric he is with the ball. I mean, those punt returns. I got another question. All right, so Dwayne Harris, we barely see him in the offense. I mean, normally he comes in to block, and it's like the most telltale sign that you're going to run when you bring in Dwayne Harris. It's like I'm screaming at the TV every time, or they send him.
Yeah, well, he caught a touchdown pass yesterday.
I'm going to say this. That fade, he went up strong.
That was sweet.
And he was great last year. Like, that catch was awesome. Should we maybe incorporate him a little more into the offense? Could that help? I mean, I know we love Sterling Shepard, high draft pick. I know we love Victor Cruz, but maybe he can – spark a little bit. What are your thoughts on that?
To me, he's a guy who does have a role on this team as a receiver. But again, you know, to me, he gets sprinkled in. You can't make him part of the regular three-man rotation because those other three guys, those are your bread and butter guys. And like yesterday, Dwayne Harris has a role. There are going to be spots where you're going to need him, and he'll come through for you. And that's great to have. Not everybody has a number four who's that good. But you can't take away snaps from your top three to get Dwayne Harris on the field more. That just doesn't make sense.
And, Tim, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. We had a caller earlier in the program who asked the same exact question, wanting to see a little bit more of Harris. I agree with you, Paul. I think it comes down to, you know, whether or not you want to take Shepard, Cruz, or Beckham off the field, number one. And, you know, the other factor is a lot of people were asking about different formations for the Giants to throw out. Actually, Ben McAdoo was asked about this in the postgame, constantly using three wide receiver sets, and he said, listen, we like to have our playmakers on the field at the same time. We feel they give us the best chance to be productive, and on paper at least, you can't necessarily argue that. We do have Shakes back on the line, so let's hear from Mr. Shakes.
Oh, good.
Shakes, what's happening?
How are you, Shakes?
Hey, what's going on, P. Dot? What's going on, Lance?
Happy Thanksgiving. Late one to you.
No doubt, man. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy holidays, man. I hope everybody had a good time.
Very
Same
good.
To you. So what do you have for us, Shakes?
I got two statements here. I got two statements. And then I think I'm going to end it off with a question.
Okay.
All right. So first statement is this. And I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now. Like, the old Giants of last year, maybe the year before that and the year before that, we will find ways to lose to these two teams that we just beat, the Bears and the Browns.
Right.
We will find ways to lose to these games, excuse me, in the past. This year, we did. We won. It's a different Giant team. To me, that proves, because in my mind, the good teams win a lot of games, right?
Right.
But the good teams also beat the teams that they supposed to beat.
Yes.
That's fair.
That's a good team, okay? So now that I know that the Giants are a good team, now I want to know if they are elite. Are they elite and get to the playoffs and can go far? I don't know that yet, but these games that's coming up, Pittsburgh, Dallas, Detroit, they're going to show me something. They're going to show me something.
Shakes, isn't it great, Shakes, by the way? Shakes, isn't it great, though, that they're actually in position to try to answer that question for you?
Yes.
Because in recent years, they haven't even been in that position.
Yes, sir. It's a beautiful thing. It's been what I've been waiting for since I've been calling this show, P. Dot. You know.
Yeah, that's a question we couldn't even ask in the last few years.
Exactly, and I've been saying this. I want to dominate. I want to watch my team dominate. And no, we're not dominating, but we're winning the games. And as a Giant fan, that's all we ask for, is to give us some good games to watch on Sunday, our favorite team to watch. We don't want to sit here and be yelling at the TV every week. We just don't want to do it. Okay?
I'm with you, Shakes.
It's great. Now, my next statement is this, Spags. A lot of people was down on Spags last year. 32-second, 32-ranked defense. What he's done in St. Louis, what he's done in Baltimore, what he's done in New Orleans. And I'm the only – well, I can't say I'm the only one, but I'm the main guy that just said, no, no, if you give him some weapons, he will flourish. Give the man some toys. You can't just give him any old thing and say, okay, make us a top 10 defense. It's not going to work that way. You need some toys. And what Reese did this offseason, $200 million contracts, he gave him some toys, and now you see what Spags is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that right there, all the Spags haters, I'm looking and I'm pointing to you because I told you also.
Well, Shakes, we're breaking bread together today. You understand? You and me are breaking bread together. This is, really good.
Shakes, every coach needs good players no matter what position you're in. But real quickly, Shakes, I know you had a question because I want to get to at least one more call before we wrap up. So what's your question?
Okay, my last question, and I'll take it off of air off of this one. But, Pew, I know that he's practiced limited last week. How do he look? And do you think he'll be available to play against Pittsburgh? If not Pittsburgh, at least hopefully Dallas.
Shakes.
And thank y'all for taking my call.
I want to clarify. According to Coach McAdoo, when Pugh went out on the practice field the other day, McAdoo said he did some moving around. That's not really practice. Just said he was moving around.
And he also said that he had a setback.
The following day, he did not go out there at all because Coach McAdoo admitted he got sore and had a setback after moving around. That is not a great scenario. So he did not make the trip, by the way, yesterday or Saturday to Cleveland for yesterday's game. They did leave him behind to rest and to get treatment. That's not the best of signs. So we will see what happens this week. But I would just say based on that, you would think logically he's going to have to at least get through 2 or 3 days of work before they even consider activating him for a game on Sunday. So I would say right now, maybe not looking great for Pittsburgh. I wouldn't say 100% no, but I'd say not looking great. You're probably better off shooting for the following week against Dallas. That would be my thinking right now, based on the evidence that's before us. Coach McAdoo is going to be on a conference call in about 10 minutes.
A lot will depend on can he get back even on the field this week. Not necessarily practicing, but can he get back
around? If he can't do any practicing at all, he's not going to play.
And that's going to even make it tougher to get back for the Cowboys game. A lot up in the air. Who knows? Maybe Brett Jones could get back. That may be.
I'd say he's got a better chance
to get a little bit more depth at left guard. All right, Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe will get the final word. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, great to talk to you. Just listen to you. I had a call in there where Paul started with Spags, and he is doing a great job. And he's came under Jimmy Johnson, and he's fallen in line there. That one negative caller, I'd hate to see what he'd be like if he was in Green Bay or Carolina now. You know, it's not easy.
It's
you know, so. No, I think we do have an elite defense there, and, you know, we're going to go as far as the offense can go, you know, with that. And, you know, the draft the last 2 years, I think 2 years ago we went mostly offense. This year was defense, and I think next year would be if there's an upgrade for the team and just signing our own players. And it'll be interesting here Thursday to see how the Cowboys and the Vikings do. So, and one other thing, Pittsburgh only got by the Green Bay or the Browns about the same score.
24-9 they won. Yeah. It was also a close game and then late. But, I mean, you can't necessarily judge. If the rationale, Joe, is that, well, Pittsburgh played a close game with Cleveland and the Giants played a close game, so the Giants match up well with the Steelers, you know every week is totally different. I don't necessarily buy into that.
I agree on that. And, you know, it's just how it's going to come down here now here, and our offense is going to have to come through there because the defense is going to show up. And, you know, the last couple weeks maybe we did have some letdowns in there, but we did win the game. That's because our defense kept us in there and our elite. So thanks for taking my call. Bye.
You got it, Joe. Appreciate the phone call. Every year, every team has an identity, and this year – the defense certainly is a big part of the team's identity because they've been responsible for a number of victories when the offense has been up and down. And again, another big test against one of the most prolific offenses in the NFL, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Antonio Brown, 3 touchdowns against the Colts last Thursday. And remember, the Steelers are going to have a little extra rest because they played on Thanksgiving. So it's a mini bye for them coming off that Thursday game. Well, that is going to wrap things up for us here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls. I know we didn't get to much tweets. We'll try to answer as many of them off the air as possible to continue the interaction. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern. We'll be back up and running on Tuesday. Ben McAdoo will have a conference call shortly. Stay locked to Giants.com for full coverage. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Have a good one.